This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
And it's Brock and Salk here, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. It's been fun arguing today. You guys want to argue some more? Who's in? Let's argue some more. Tell me more about how some random dude is your favorite quarterback of all time. tell me more. Tell me about how your favorite quarterback of all time is like Trent Green.
Charlie Batch.
Cade McNown.
Right. Charlie Batch and Jeff George. That's awesome.
Who's your favorite quarterback of the last 20? Like the guy you got to watch. Like you've got, like you're keeping tabs on his every move. Oh, Charlie Batch. Guy's one of the great backups in the game. Cool. Yeah, I always watched in Detroit and Pittsburgh to see whether or not Charlie Batch would come in.
He was just a big Max Hall guy.
He was just a gamer. All right, back off on Charlie Batch.
Do I have to?
I'm surprised.
Where's Drew Stanton? I got to know where Drew Stanton is. Is he playing in this game
or not?
Kyle,
was there any John Kitna on any of those? I bet you if we took calls long enough, Kitna would definitely come up.
Think so?
Yeah.
How did not one person call up and say Matt Hasselbeck? No one thought it was Matt Hasselbeck? Guy was a legend here. When Pete Carroll wanted to move on from a Matt Hasselbeck who was no longer good enough to start in the NFL.
Oh, he was. He went and started and played well in Tennessee.
He was no longer good enough to start in the NFL.
Too. Yes, he did.
No, he did not. He's a backup after that. He was fine, but he was, come on. People nearly had a conniption because he was going to let Matt Hasselbeck go. No one's favorite quarterback was Matt Hasselbeck?
Is this what you were going to tease to?
No.
Is
this why you didn't have a tease ready? This is just like a distraction thing for a minute.
All right.
This is just a little thing.
Okay. Can we get back on
Who's your favorite quarterback the last 25 years? I got to tell you guys, I always loved Dan Orlovsky. It's just something about when he comes into a game. I felt like good things were going to happen. And so I've always been a big Orlovsky fan. Really? He played on 2-0-16 teams. Is that a problem?
Hey,
no, I just felt like he had it.
Howdy and Kyle, quick question. Which has blown Salk's mind more? The caller from a month ago or 3 weeks ago about the Mariners who just said, you know what, if you compare the Mariners to themselves.
Oh, let me stop you right there. That guy.
Nothing is more shocking to me than the fact that there are people out there who like baseball that don't know what a 6-4-3 is. That's still the most shocking thing that has happened on this show in as long as I can remember. But a guy calling up to say Charlie Batch is his favorite quarterback of the last 25 years has to be right up there. It has to be.
Thank you.
It has to be.
I even asked him on the phone. I was like, oh, like with the Lions? And he's like, oh, no, I was thinking more with the Steelers.
Right. Why?
Baller.
Like, oh, like really particularly with the Steelers as Ben's backup.
Pretty good numbers. Pretty good numbers, Charlie.
I'm sure the numbers are fine, but how could possibly be your favorite quarterback?
Respect, Mike.
To each their own, Salk. It's the beauty of quarterback.
Who's the guy who played at, was it Rutgers? Mike McCann or something? Who played in Detroit for a while?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
You might as well have said that guy. I think that guy replaced Charlie Batch in Detroit.
He was a runner.
Mike, you asked for opinions.
That's right.
Not facts. That's when exactly people call to give you opinions, you can't say they're wrong.
Yeah, why don't you
so
give
strange.
Why don't you give your opinion you gave off the top of the show?
All right.
That the Seahawks are going to go 8-3.
Seahawks are going to go 8-3 the rest of the way. Mark it.
Market 8.
Put it on the board. Yes. Seahawks are going to go 8-3. At the very least, 7-4. That's what they have in front of them. The expectation game has changed on them, Brock.
Mm.
They're pretty good. I think they're pretty good. They run the ball. They do what they say they're going to do. Their defense is going to improve under Pete Carroll. They've got one of the best quarterbacks in the game. Why can't they go 8-3 the rest of the way? Don't say pass rush.
Don't make me go Bob on you and pull out the schedule right now and go win.
Don't
or
do
lost.
That.
I'm not going to do
don't
that.
Don't do that,
because
bro.
If you live in that world and actually look at who
I'm
they're going to play.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay. You're just looking at a very myopic view
yes.
of the Seahawks over the weekend
yes.
being who – you know what? They said they were going to be this season as much as any time this year. And doing so against, well, arguably the best team in the NFL.
If the Seahawks played the way they did on Sunday, they go 8-3 the rest of the year.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yep.
Maybe 6-5. If you can't affect the passer and you can't stop people defensively, you have a hard time winning
when
that's paired with
running the
football.
If the Seahawks play the way they did, not just defensively, but also offensively, Brock, if they play the way they did,
Negative
Nelly, Mr. Negative Nancy over there, if they play the way they did on Sunday, they could go 8-3 the rest of the year.
Just because you raise your voice at me doesn't mean it has to change my opinion, okay? You don't just like yelling at the Charlie
I'm not
Batch
yelling
guy.
At you. I'm hopefully guilt-tripping you because you're being negative.
I'm paid here, okay?
You're only looking at half the picture.
I have an opinion, and I don't think the game that they played on Sunday is going to lead them to an 8-3 record.
Pete does.
It doesn't matter where we're going or who we're playing against. That's how we would like to play. We played it really as close to what we wanted to do as it could have been. Mm-hmm. And third downs were beautiful. No turnovers again. We ran the football. We ran the ball in short yards. We ran the ball in the goal line. All of those things. Russ was you know, big percentage and big played them. The receivers came through downfield. The protection was there when we needed it. It was really, and we took care of some highlighted players for the most part as well. So we did some really, really good things. It was by far the best complete effort by the offense.
Well, we could go beyond just his normal formula of 50-plus, which, by the way, I don't think they got to because it was just 13 completions. You know, won a ton of attempts. But beyond that, Pete's right. Like, when they've played that game, you win. Seattle, in fact, has been 30-0 all time when they've rushed 30-plus times and have a QB rating of 125-plus. I mean, those two variables, you win. Even bad Seahawk teams through the years, when they hit those two markers, were 30-0. In fact, over the last 10 years, teams have won 97% of the time when they've hit those two markers around the league. So, yes, I get it. That formula, you plus two in turnovers, you run for 190 yards, and your QB has got a rating above 125, you should win 99.99999, if not 100. But that doesn't take into account 306 yards on first down
most,
you gave your opponent.
Most teams do not have the offensive firepower that the Rams do. You're right. They'll play play Kansas City later this year. They're a really good offensive team. Green Bay will put up some yards, although half their team is hurt.
Chargers are a really good offensive
team.
They're
good, but they're not like this. Come on, man. They're not like this.
Pretty good.
They're not like what you just saw. The Rams are lighting the world on fire, the only undefeated team in the league.
Yep. No, the Chiefs are also undefeated.
And along with the Chiefs. There you go. Those two.
Yep.
And I just mentioned the Chiefs.
Yep.
Chargers aren't undefeated.
No, you're right.
They're mortal. They're human. They can be beat. They can be knocked down, especially here.
Yep.
You're going to play the Chargers here, not down in the heat in San Diego. Brock, there's no one else in the league putting up yards and points the way the Rams and Chiefs are.
Yeah,
why can't you go 8-3 if you play the game that you played over the weekend?
Yeah. I think that is a fair argument. I just don't know if they can play that game offensively all season long against some better fronts and some better groups or better defenses. That Rams defense at the second and third level exposed. The
True.
Vikings exposed them, and the Seahawks absolutely
exposed
them.
But that's the defense that has specifically destroyed this team for years.
When they specifically could not run the ball,
could
not commit to running the ball, could not do any of those things they wanted to do.
I mean, we watched them try to run the ball against the Rams. Aaron Donald knifed into the backfield and hit Thomas Rawls 5 yards deep.
It was embarrassing.
In the backfield.
Yes.
That didn't happen.
Nope.
They barely even lost yards on any. How many carries did they lose yards on?
Mm.
How many negative plays, like actual negative yardage plays, the Seahawks have in that game? Two? Maybe three? If that, I mean, I know Russell took a sack, so there's one. Other than that, like, did they have maybe two others? I think Mike Davis might have been caught once.
One time, yep, on the outside.
All right, so maybe
yep.
it was one. I mean, but that's normal
two.
For
Absolutely.
A team in the game. They were playing against the Rams a couple of years ago. Every single possession started at 2nd and 16
yep.
after a running play.
Yeah, I just, the challenge for me and why I have a hard time saying 8-3 and why my expectations necessarily haven't changed, Mike, is Pete Carroll is absolutely two things and has wanted to be. And he's hit one of them for a decade here and why he's been so phenomenal. He has wanted to be a balanced team, which is really a run team, and it's always coupled with defense. Like, those two things have to marry together.
Don't you think that of anything, Pete's defense will get better under Pete Carroll? Like, if there's one, look, Pete Carroll has strengths and weaknesses. Let's be really clear. I think we can talk about this together, right?
Are you ready now?
Pete's got some real strengths and some weaknesses.
Okay.
Pete's weaknesses, I'll start with those because we want to really emphasize the strengths. We'll say them last. Pete's weaknesses are with some long-term accountability to his players
mm-hmm.
and falling in love with them, I think, right? And not wanting to
loyalty.
Move on. Yeah, loyalty so it becomes a weakness at times for him. And some of his situational football and discipline out on the field.
Yep.
Right? If you want Pete Carroll's weaknesses, there they are.
Mm-hmm.
Excessive loyalty to a fault, issues with some game management, and discipline for his players.
Mm-hmm.
That's really Pete's weaknesses. Pete's strengths are that loyalty and the culture and the way it gets his guys to play with their hair on fire,
mm-hmm.
and specifically his ability to coach defense. He is a great defensive coach, has always been one, and it gets ignored because he's California Pete and because all the other stuff gets talked about more often. Pete Carroll and his players are wild and crazy, and there's always some, you know, someone's flipping off the sideline or God knows what mm-hmm. else. But at the heart and the root of all of that is a great defensive coach. Great his entire career. From San Francisco as a coordinator to the, starting in Minnesota back in the days, Bud Grant, loves to talk about it, through the Niners, through his time as a head coach of the Jets, and then the Patriots, and then at USC. USC won because of defense. They didn't win because of their Heisman quarterbacks. Matt Leinart, come on. They won because of great defenses. Fantastic. Unbelievable college defense. Yep. And when he got here to Seattle, he brought that to the Seahawks. They drafted some good guys and Pete coached them up with a great defensive system that has worked over years and years and years, decades.
Yep.
This defense will get better.
Yep. Yeah, it has to.
It will.
It has to.
If you said history's the judge, history will tell you whether UW and Oregon can both be good at the same time, you said earlier. Mm-hmm. History tells you Pete Carroll's defense will be better in 5 weeks than it is today.
I would add two little nuggets to that. And I think Red Bryant, who raised the 12th man flag on Sunday and was awesome, he was joined the pregame show, and he really hit on this and emphasized this over and over again because it's why his career really escalated and took off, is that Pete, I would have to add this to his list of strengths, Mike. Pete looks for what people do and do well instead of focusing on what they can't do. And he's going to have to do that this year defensively, I think, up front more than he's ever had to before. How can they possibly find some pass rush? How can you get Deion Jordan or Jacob Martin or Brandon Jackson or some of those pieces that have to affect the quarterback? How do we do that?
Oh, he's got to find a way. And maybe it means Deion Jordan actually has to get healthy and come on in the second half. And look, I'll admit this more than anything, this little prediction that I have going today. First of all, it may just be based on one game that they can't repeat. That may have been the high watermark for the way this team plays, and if that's the case, they're not coming close to that. And secondly, injuries could absolutely play a factor in that.
Yeah, you lose DJ Fluker.
Or Frank Clark or a few other guys, I don't know what you do.
Yeah, I think, though, from an offensive standpoint, and I'm serious about this, in some ways, other than Russell, one of the most irreplaceable guys. Maybe DJ Fluker for his mentality and his ability to move people. You played with Joey Hunt, didn't really miss a beat, got a 100-yard rusher. I think Posick and Sweezy, they love Sweezy a little bit more. Maybe Dwayne Brown you could add to that mix, a name that we've hardly mentioned but who has absolutely solidified a huge vacant void for years and years and years playing that left tackle position. Doug's really not contributed, the last few weeks. Or Brandon or receivers. Running backs, I think you feel 2, 3, maybe 4 deep. So, you better not lose Fluke because he kind of sets that whole agenda up front of owning
him. And Frank Clark and Shaquille Griffin are sort of the guys I'm looking at. Oof. But, gosh, there's so many interesting success stories on this team. Tyler Lockett's having a great year. They made the decision to sign him in the offseason. John Schneider had a really good offseason.
Mm-hmm.
He made the decision to re-sign Tyler Lockett instead of Paul Richardson. Did Richardson play last night? I know the game was on. I didn't see him. Brock asked me that question this morning. I had no idea he was in the game. Lockett, meanwhile, is catching a touchdown every single game and has been their best offensive threat on the outside, not close. They re-signed Bradley McDougal. Was that a good move? He's been the best defense player on the team.
Yep.
I mean, he has been the best defensive player on the team. Shaquille Griffin has grown himself into a first corner, a legitimate starting top-tier corner. Trey Flowers might be my favorite pick they made in the offseason. That kid's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's going to end up being a pro bowler down the line, but as a guy who's never even played the position, he's been solid.
Will Dissly was on his way to Rookie of the Year before he tore his patella.
Okay.
I mean, he was going to win that award.
I mean, I think that's pretty obvious based on everything
Michael
he's
Dixon
done early.
He's
fascinating to watch. He'll play that much.
You wait. They're saving Rashad Penny for the second half of the season. Just wait till he explodes.
DJ Fluker was absolute. I mean, DJ Fluker's changed the running game for this team.
Yep.
We'll wait and see what happens with Ed Dixon if and when he comes back healthy here in one more week. This is going to be the last week without him, and then he should be back for that San Diego game after the bye. So, I mean, you really do have like a pretty interesting offseason that has made this group kind of fun and different and not quite what they look like at the beginning of the year.
Yep, you keep building on it. You take that game, man. That game has got to travel. They always say defense travels. That's why you're always more comfortable. Just like in baseball that you're watching, pitching and defense. If you can't touch the Astros, if you can't hit them, you're not going to do anything against them. And here they are playing in the ALCS once again. And I think when you play defense, that just travels. Run game should too.
This is weird. So Paul Richardson did play last night, had 4 catches. Mm-hmm. Guess what happened? He got hurt.
He got banged up.
This may really shock everybody.
What?
Paul Richardson got hurt.
Muscular.
Yeah, it's just a little.
By a hammy.
It was a knee, actually. Wow. Sounds like he's got a little knee. Brock, you had Miami against Florida State this weekend, and you got some mean tweets. A lot of them.
I'm going to say meanest ever.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, on my little talk back, I said to my producer, Jimmy Zeroli, I said, Jim, my phone is sitting here right next to me. And I'm feeling like VH1 with the music videos with the little bubbles.
I'm feeling these pop-up tweets.
I'm not even looking at it. I dare not look at that phone during the game. But all of a sudden, I could just feel these little pop-up tweets. Because there are about 8 calls in that game that were one way or another. And yeah,
there was Are there more from the Florida State fans or from the Hurricanes fans?
There's more from the Florida State fans.
Yeah. Now, the further north you go, the further south you go.
You're a Miami. And I hate every ESPN analyst. You're all scum.
Scum. Wow.
Is Brock Heward's Coke dealer a Canes fan?
Whoa.
Brock Heward? Really? That's your name?
Wait, hold on. Are you sure that one's a mean tweet, not a real question?
No.
Hey, really, I got news for you, Howdy. Hold on, wait. The Bills have officially signed someone's favorite quarterback, Derek Anderson, today.
Oh, they did. Get out of work.
Brock Heward looks like Jack Nicholson's Joker when he puts on flesh-colored makeup to go on a date with Vicky Vale.
That's kind of true. I can see that.
Oh, I got some Joker in me.
I once respected you both as a player and a broadcaster. After your temperament against FSU, I now believe you are a true fraud.
Oh, man.
That one hurts.
You lost him forever.
Look at my face. Look. Do I look like the Joker?
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, you do.
The eyebrows and...
I mean, not the new Joker, but
what
the
old
Joker.
What do you think,
Joker.
Kyle?
It's like the cheeks, the jowls.
Yeah, you got some Joker in you.
Yeah, I don't want to look at you.
Brock, quit being for Miami, you...
There were a lot of swear words. Howdy, did you have to bleep
lots
these
of bleeping.
More than ever
Why were
before?
You so for Miami? Are you in the bag for them?
I guess. Did you ever answer whether your name is seriously Brock Heward?
Seriously your name?
Should I respond to her?
Say yes.
Okay.
Brock Heward does not really have a clue about the game of football.
Wow.
That is all. Like, other teams get depressed when they cause a turnover. But Miami, because they got a chain, gets excited. How did Brock Heward play in the NFL? Dumb as rocks. Shut the up, you clown! You're anti-FSU! Too bad we got the D team calling our game! Regardless of the outcome, Brock Heward is a putz and should never be allowed to call another FSU-Miami game again.
Yeah, Brock, do you think that's true? Should they stop allowing you to call
FSU
Miami
games? Hold on, you got more, Howdy?
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, you know what we did not do? We did not give a disclaimer to my mom or dad to turn off the radio.
Sorry, Mom.
We
sorry, Dad.
We can't do this to Coach Heward because I know what's going to happen. He's going to call and say, is your job okay?
But why are people at Florida State so whiny?
It's really
did
mad.
You guys want Miami to win? It sure sounds like it, you dingleberries.
Whoa.
Wow.
Can you say that?
I think so.
The FSU meltdown was almost enough to overcome the pain of listening to Brock Heward drone on and on and on and on and on and on.
Do you drone on a little bit? Is that part of the knock against you?
I don't know. Mike, I don't know. I did reach back to a few of these.
Oh, you did?
I did.
You wrote back?
I did.
Like what? Like, what do you say?
The one that said, I know nothing about football, I said, I tweeted her or him back and said, Jim Mora agrees with you. So I tried to have some fun with it.
Any response back after
no.
that?
No.
No. No. They turned tail and hid. That's too bad.
I've known Brock a long time.
No, unfortunately.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Where's the one where
he... No, he's not a friend of mine.
That's the one I was looking for.
I've known Brock a long time.
Did you have any reaction to that?
To what Brock Heward says?
Yeah.
No. Okay. No. I would put very little stock in what Brock Heward has to say about anything that has to do with football.
Howdy, can you change the open to the show and get rid of the I would put very little stock into what Brock Heward has to say and instead get Jim Mora going?
Happened last year, man.
In all fairness to my comment.
Oh my God, what a buffoon. What a complete buffoon Jim Mora is. Remember we had him on the show?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Well, What a ridiculous
that
human.
Was so great.
What a ridiculous human being he is.
I did not like when I had to call him like 3 times. He's like, I'm trying to get down the stairs. Call me in a minute. I called him in 90 seconds. Was that a minute? Like, I was like 2 minutes, coach. Call me back later.
Who's the hardest person for you to get on the phone, Kyle?
Joe Tessitore is always awkward.
Right.
Matt Hasselbeck's always kind of cold on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll see that. Yeah.
Kind of bothering him.
And then Moore is just awkward. Or when I have to pick up and thank Gambo for coming on after Salk has, like, torched him.
No.
And like, never. Oh, yeah, they call your show Brock and Salk late. Okay, thanks for coming. Hey, thanks for your time, Gambo.
In fairness to my comment.
But Gambo brought out the serious New York accent the last time he was on. Did you ask him any questions about that?
It was kind of annoying, right?
It was nine. Like, last year they won 9 games. Like, 9? They won 9? He just, like, I know he's got a New York accent in general, but didn't you feel like he was sort of, like amping it up a little bit?
I know. He won a big award down there.
I wonder if maybe he'd gone back home for, like, a little while, and he had met, like, seen some of his old friends.
Possibly.
Or something.
Sure.
And because of it, he's, like, his accent was coming out more than normal.
It happens to
But
you.
The best to call is Morosi. Morosi's like so excited to receive the phone call. He's like talking 100 miles an hour. He's like, oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Yeah, we're just in Chicago right now. Can't wait to talk to Brock and Salk. You guys are the best. Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, how you guys been? How you doing? What's up, John? All right.
He's the best to call, but he definitely has to be the hardest to schedule.
Well,
I mean, no harder than Jason Stark used to be back in the day.
That was impossible. Stark just didn't want to come on.
He's so busy.
I mean, he's so busy. He's so busy. We couldn't possibly find time to have the same time every single week. You couldn't possibly just put it in his calendar.
It's going to be tough at 9, but I think it'll work.
Oh, thanks, Jason. All right, thanks for squeezing us in for the weekly hit that we've agreed to do. All right.
Hey, can we talk a little bit? Can we play that like Wiki sound?
No, we're going to replay your guy, Jeff Van Gundy.
Oh, you want to?
Yeah, we talked to Jeff. You know what? It's not every day we talk to Jeff Van Gundy.
True.
That doesn't happen every day on this show, Brock. And so for anybody who missed it at 7:30, Jeff Van Gundy said some pretty firm, committed statements about the future of the NBA in Seattle that you should all hear next on Brock and Salk.
Your car today.
Also accepting boats, motorcycles, RVs, and real estate donations.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Jim Mora, man. Jim Mora. Unbelievable. Hey, it's a pretty cool night. Friday night, obviously, at Key Arena. Great to see NBA basketball here in Seattle for what looks to be the final event at Key Arena. Jeff Van Gundy of ESPN was there calling the game, and he joined us earlier today here on the Venue Kings Hotline. Jeff, how you doing?
Doing fine, guys. How are you?
We're great. How was your trip to Seattle last week?
It's always good. I got family out in Snoqualmie, so I went out there and saw that beautiful place. And then the game itself was what you expect from Seattle basketball fans, which is an overwhelming response. You know, they'd be a top 10 NBA city the moment they got brought another franchise.
Top 10 from a fan stand base or a fan, you know, standpoint or a history?
Yeah,
or
exactly. Well, it's all of it. You know, it's they've got great fan base. You know, you got a great city. The location is unique of the arena. You know, right in the middle of a neighborhood. I've always loved the building. I don't know if it makes money or not. You know, I don't know if that was just a lie to be able to, you know, get more money from Oklahoma City or not. But I think all of it makes it a fantastic basketball town. And they've had great teams. They have great history. So I think there's so many teams or so many cities that don't support, you know, just look at the top bottom 10 of attendance figures in the NBA. And you can figure out really quickly which would be better served having a franchise in Seattle.
You think that's part of the reason KD wanted this game? I mean, it wasn't as if he was here, Jeff, for 5 years and Jeff Van Gundy with us. I mean, it was just a season. He was obviously a top pick for them. But do you think that attachment and knowing, as you know, obviously, and KD has learned in his decade in basketball how unique Seattle was, you think that's why he wanted this game here played in October?
That's interesting. I'm not really sure the reason, but even his year there, where the fans knew they were gone, you know, there was good support. I actually was at, I think they had a New Year's Eve game, and I was out in Seattle, and I came to the game. And, you know, even for a team that they knew was gone, the support was still magnificent. And I think Durant has great appreciation, the longer his career is, for how good his rookie year was and how different it could have been in some other situations. And so I do think he has a great level of appreciation for just how good he had it during his 1 year there.
Have you seen some of the plans for the building they're going to be building here over the next couple of years?
I have not. I think they're getting hockey, in a year and a half or so?
Yeah.
And that'll be great. But I have not seen the plans for the building.
What do you think is the appetite for these NBA owners to either expand and cut their checks 32 ways, or may take another franchise from another city, as unfortunately we went through? Do you think there's any appetite for that?
Well, I think there's that, you know, the answer is always money, right? So I don't know what the question is, but the answer is always money. And so for the owners themselves, I think they would have to be enticed to cut their checks, you know, 32 ways, and they'd have to see the overall benefit from that. I think the better chance is relocation. You know, they were close with Sacramento. Sacramento, it continues to be a non-playoff team, but they have shown when they've won that they support their team. I don't think they have a chance of relocating. But if you just look at so many of the teams who perpetually don't draw, I just don't understand for the life of me why the NBA, when it has a vibrant, proven city like Seattle, why they wouldn't have more urgency to get a team back there. What? It just seems like they've been slow walked this whole time. And I just don't think it's right.
Well, I think I would answer that, Jeff, as we've been kind of close to it here for a long time, or the last decade, and a lot of conversations and a lot of airtime on this station and everywhere else. I think it's because of the political mess. I think they would say, the NBA would say, you know, we're just not going to do that. Howard wanted to build a building. He didn't get it. He got stabbed in the back. The city, the mayor, the council said, the benefit is. I think it's just because of some of the wonkiness in the past of the politics. And I hope with what Todd Lewicki and the NHL have just showed, with private investment and what you're willing to do, that, you know, a owner that really wants it in private money can really be the catalyst that, you know, in my opinion, that is kind of with this political wonkiness is kept the NBA away.
Well, and I think you state something right. I mean, I'm not living it like you guys live it every day, but you really don't want to keep a franchise there if you're not willing to put your money up if you're asking for public money for new arenas. I mean, you know, as an owner, you have an obligation to me to use your money in the best interest of the city. And asking them to pay the freight for an arena is not right. But that all being said, I don't know what the next team is going to be there. But I tell you, it was always a top-flight NBA city. And I just don't think the NBA is maximizing ultimately what it can without having Seattle having an NBA team. I don't care if it's expansion or relocation, as painful as that may be to some, but it's too good of NBA city to leave dormant.
Hey, Jeff, how is the league different under Adam Silver than it was under David Stern?
Well, I think everybody has more say in the, you know, he's a more inclusive commissioner, which I think in some ways is very good. I think in other ways he has to make sure that he holds a tight rein on some of these parties who I think try to bully their way to satisfaction. So I think that's the number one thing. I think the game has changed a lot rules-wise. I think the schedule continues to evolve in that, you know, cutting back on back-to-back games. I think the commissioner, Commissioner Silver, definitely has a player's bent on this type of thing rather than an owner's bent, which I think, you know, David Stern always had. So I think there's some big ways it's changed, and I think there's some subtle ways. But I think the overall thing is the player's opinion matters a lot more now under Commissioner Silver than it did to, you know, David Stern.
That's great stuff, Jeff. I really appreciate it, Mike does. We appreciate you jumping on with us. And you're holding out to be the next coach in Seattle, from what I understand, right? You're not taking another job until this comes back and you can be the coach.
Well, I tell you this. If anybody who could get a job in Seattle would limit their other opportunities just to have that chance. I mean, think about that place. It's just, you know, it just reminded me. Sometimes you can forget, you know, you've been gone from a place so long. To have that ability to go back for a preseason game and have it feel like a playoff game in so many other cities makes you remember what you're missing. And so, yeah, believe me, if you ever, whenever you get an NBA team, you'll have like an avalanche of people trying to be their next coach.
There you go. That's Jeff Van Gundy. Joined us a little bit earlier in the show, and nice to talk to him, NBA analyst, of course, for ESPN, for the first time ever on this show.
Two things jump out to me there in re-listening to that. Top 10 market. Do you believe that the NBA, the day it decides to come back, is going to be one of the top 10 out of 30 markets in all the NBA?
I don't think that's that hard.
Really?
I don't think there are 10 good markets in the NBA. Hmm. Are there 10 good teams in the NBA?
10 teams that can win a title? Probably not.
So. Nope, I mean, probably. How hard is it to be in the top 10?
Probably not.
Like
but
four markets where you can win.
You've got like a San Antonio, Chicago, a Lakers, a Celtics. I mean, you've got a bunch that have been Utah that have been in their places an awfully long time that are pretty entrenched, and that's quite, I think, a statement. Number two, I'm also curious, and I shot you guys this last night. Who do you think this NHL arena and everything that the NHL is going to do, and what you just heard from Van Gundy, that the NBA loves that location of that stadium and that arena right in the heart of it. Who do you think this is going to affect the most in town?
Hmm.
Is it going to be the Mariners that are going to feel the most impact of it? Is it going to be the college team and you know, Mike Hopkins, who, by the way, I think preseason poll comes out today, Kyle, in the Pac-12. And I saw some people indication that the Huskies may be second or third in the conference as far as Pac-12 basketball play this year. Is it going to affect the college guys? Because Tyler Lewicki is going to do this thing right. This arena is going to be world class. And it is, to me, the most significant step to the NBA coming back. I'm just curious who you think it affects the most. Do you think it, you know, from a purely competitive standpoint? Because I think it's going to make everybody in this town better. There is nobody that can sit on their hands.
I think that's probably true.
When a Lywicki comes in and this NHL comes in, and what Van Gundy said about the NBA eventually, of being a top 10 kind of market and opportunity.
There were nine teams. He mentioned the bottom 10. Here's the top. There were nine teams that had a 100% or more home attendance record, if that makes sense. The Mavericks somehow had 103% of capacity as the average for the year. But if you look at the nine teams had 100%. Mavericks, Kings, Heat, Raptors, Celtics, Cavaliers, Warriors, 76ers, and Thunder all had 100% home attendance. Kings?
Well, new arena.
All right. Is it brand new last year?
A couple years ago.
All right.
Yeah, new ownership.
The other teams at 99% or above, Spurs, Rockets, Lakers, Bulls, Trailblazers, were all at 99% or above.
In the bottom?
The bottom looks like this. Hawks were the worst at 76%. Then the Pistons, Hornets, Nets, Grizzlies, Pacers, Wizards, Bucks, Clippers, Nuggets, Wolves.
Yep.
That's your bottom.
Yeah, Memphis and Atlanta would be the two teams.
And they're all under 90%. Yep. Only the Hawks were below 80%.
Yeah, those are the two teams, I think, of Van Gundy and NBA people would say, you better start supporting your team. Because if you're not, there is a market with a world-class arena. And by the way, some NBA ownership up there. And Bonderman,
Hornets and Grizzlies are probably the two where you're looking at and saying, okay, if you can't support it, that's probably on its way to Seattle. All right, coming up, Brock, let's answer people's questions. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Any question on any subject. Been a busy, interesting, weird, wild day, and we're ready to take your questions on whatever you got. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, let's answer your questions. See what you have for us today. Brock, somebody, or did you text this in? You were just asking about this in the other room. Could George Fant be a tight end? What do you think? You were just talking about that.
I'd like to save that for Blue 42 tomorrow.
All right.
John Clayton had a post-game interview with him. They played yesterday, and George Fant said he'll do whatever they ask him to do.
George Fant's an awesome dude, isn't he?
Yeah.
Every time we've interviewed him, I just come away like with a big smile.
Seahawks are working out tight end Clive Walford.
Oh, Clive from the University of Miami. Oh, he's a good player down there.
Yeah, you would know. He's from Miami.
He was a fourth-round pick.
Homer. Miami.
Am I going on with the Miami sideline reporter to do a podcast with them, Noles fans? Why, yes, I am.
Oh. Wow.
I'm going to answer that fan question tomorrow on Blue 42.
I can't wait.
Well, you're going to have to.
I can't, though.
You're going to have to wait 22 hours.
Can't wait that long.
Wait, what? You're doing a podcast with the Miami sideline reporter?
Sure am.
Why? Is it on the intersection
of like, big money, too.
Sidelines and faith?
No.
Next question.
No. Just trying to do nice things for people.
Are you going to get him on Above and Beyond?
You know, and I'm also jumping on with Justin Myers tomorrow.
Really?
Nice.
Ducks, dogs.
Okay, now that's that's legit.
Why don't we get him on the Friday, bridge? Jay Myers.
He may be coming on somebody tomorrow. We'll see.
Oh, okay. All right, what you got? What else?
Next question.
Jerks, in your humble opinion, who is the most overrated player in the NFL?
Mike does not have that.
What?
You don't have a humble opinion.
Oh. In my arrogant opinion.
Mike, in your personal facts.
In my arrogant opinion, the answer is Eli Manning.
What was the question? Most overrated?
Yeah.
Player or QB?
It says player.
Odell Beckham. Diva.
Pretty good player, though.
Why and how they paid him all that money is insane. Insane. He was all about one thing, getting paid. Those are hard players for me.
Who else is
still
on
catching balls?
Who else is on the overrated list?
Most overrated players?
Jimmy Graham.
Yeah. Way up.
He doesn't do anything.
He looks bad. Nope. I watched him the other day. He didn't look good.
Yep. Is that just a credit to Drew Brees? What? How is he so good?
Or, you know, scary enough, is it a patella injury tendon that just changed everything? Disney. I hope not. Most overrated.
Terrell Davis.
Like the Seahawks have had some big contenders.
Yeah. He doesn't play in the NFL anymore.
No, but he was.
Percy Harvin was on that list.
Rashad Penny.
Rashad Penny.
Peyton Manning
is
the king of this.
There you go.
Stop it. Next.
Next question.
Brock, what is the most unique pregame ritual you ever witnessed in a locker room?
Sean Dawkins. There are a few guys that would like read or take showers beforehand, which is always a little weird, but not that weird. They'd take like cold showers and then they put their whole uniform on. Or they would do warm-ups and then like cold shower and then the uniform back on, which was strange. But Sean Dawkins was really unique. Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Old wide receiver. Played at Cal. And then at the Colts. And I was here with him in one of his last years in the league with the Seahawks. And he would like read like butt naked just in his locker. Reading like, and he was studying Spanish as a second language. Like just like doing, not like just enjoyable written, but like classwork. It's always a little.
That was unique. How he'd get ready. Mm-hmm. Naked himself into the right headspace.
Naked.
Huh.
Yeah.
Next
whatever.
Question.
Sean Dawkins.
Tall receiver.
Who's the safety?
Brian Dawkins.
Brian Dawkins. Yeah. Okay, that's what I was thinking of.
Sean was a good dude, though. He was a good player for some years. I like that guy.
Next question.
Oh, that was a great question. Jerks, how did the Hey Man drop start?
Great question.
You have to have been listening to this station from the very beginning when we had like four advertisers.
Hey Man.
And one of them was a divorce commercial and had a whole jingle. And at the end,
so she won't clean your clock, baby.
Hey Man. Like a bluesy riff to it. And at the end, the guy would come in and go, Hey Man.
Isn't he supposedly not saying Hey Man?
Yeah, so it turned out that Colin Paisley, first producer of the show, knew the voiceover guy from that commercial and asked him about it, told him that we were like obsessed with it. And asked him if he would record it for us. And the guy was like, well, I'm actually saying Hey Man.
Hey Man.
No, you're not. You're saying Hey Man. And so we got him to record a dry version.
Hey, man.
I thought when you said great question, it was going to be, if Fant moves to tight end, what number does he change to?
Interesting. So he doesn't
now
have to
that's
keep
something.
What do they have
available?
86, do they? He should be 86. He's an 86-looking guy.
around? Or
let's see. Six?
It would have to be.
Available. 80 is large and not available, right?
Right.
So 82 is available.
Definitely not 82. Nope. That's too small of a guy.
84, 85, or 86.
You could wear 84.
You could go 84.
You could wear 86. 85, no. 85 is more of a pass receiving tight end.
Correct.
He can't wear anything in the 40s.
84, 86.
I won't think of it.
Yep.
Yes, he's got to be 84, 86.
Yep. You're good at this numerology thing.
Gematria. Gematria?
What?
Gematria or gematria?
What are you talking about?
That's like a Hebrew numerology thing. You never read the book,
what,
My Name
Mike's
is Asher
supposed
Lev?
To know?
What are you trying to say?
Are you trying to back him in a corner here?
I was just throwing it out there. I read this book in college. And
you read
about
a book once?
Gematria. Oh.
All right.
Huh. I think it's inappropriate what you're doing right now, honey.
It's about numbers.
Soundy.
Numbers and words.
Next question.
Baruch Atah Adonai?
Huh?
Baruch Atah Adonai.
Oh, please correct me.
I'm Bar Mitzvah.
You know what?
Dude.
We got two new segments we found today. Kyle and Clayton.
And Howdy Talks Hebrew.
And Howdy Talk Hebrew. They go back and forth. I think it'd be great.
Clayton doesn't need that. He's got Uber and credit card. He's got enough on his plate. He doesn't need to mess with me.
Were you following that?
No.
I was.
No.
I totally was.
Hey, was Ken Griffey Jr. doing some sort of a commercial during the baseball game?
Let him play.
I woke up from my nap and he was on. It's like, it's a let him play commercial, right? Like,
let him go have fun.
Yep.
Good on you, Junior. I like that.
Let the kid play.
That's pretty cool. I like that. All right. Are we done? Are we done here for today? Washington Wednesday tomorrow?
Washington Wednesday tomorrow.
I like that. I like that a lot.
We've got a round table tomorrow at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Bob Stelton and Jake Heaps in for a round table.
McDonough
discussion.
Is out. He's got the playoff mock committee thing.
Maybe. And then Thursday, the simulcast? Dude, these next few days are going to be huge.
Let's do Blacklist. Talk with Blacklist tomorrow.
No.
Yep.
He's always like,
I know
in
his
some,
phone's a
no,
little trouble. We're going
to
do
I'm not
it.
Talking to Blacklist.
On landline.
No. He every time you talk to him, he has no idea what's going on.
Holly Ruff?
He's like walking around in a circle inside a revolving door. Like, you can't have him on.
Van Gundy? You want Van Gundy?
I enjoyed Van Gundy.
Oh, good.
Go stand Van Gundy.
All right.
Jeff, though, seemed like he was out of breath.
He was walking.
He was a little...
He was walking.
There's a lot of suggestion he was on the
distracted.
Treadmill.
Distracted.
Yes. Walking and talking. All
right. We got to go.
In the barn.
We'll catch you guys tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Till then, the hay is in the barn. See everybody.
Get to the chopper!